Welcome to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Zaltzberg, editor of the Herald Times in Bloomington. And today we're going to talk about the upcoming elections, city elections in Bloomington, Columbus, Terre Haute, and then probably something about 2008. Mm-hmm. Joining me in the studio is Adam Ragusea.
Hi, everybody.
Thanks for being here with me today, Adam.
Sure.
And we have on the phone my old friend John Harmon from Columbus.
Yo.
Hey, John. And Mark Bennett joining us from the Terre Haute Tribune-Star.
Good to be here.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for coming. If you have questions or comments today, please phone us at 855-0811 or 877-285-9348. Or you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. Well, welcome to everybody. Thanks for being here. We have big elections coming up. John, what's going on in Columbus?
Well, I hesitate to call it big, although it's a mayoral race. Judging from the primary, we had an embarrassing 9% turnout, and we're trying to whip up some interest in the coming election, but we only have the mayoral race is contested, although the opponent, the mayor, the incumbent three-term mayor is a Democrat, and the Republican opponent is not like a party candidate. So that's there's not a lot of a daylight on that race. And there's one contestant at large. There's three people going for two seats there. And then there is one contested city council race. So we have one real hot district race in the city. So beyond that, it's not much.
What's the makeup of the council now, and any chance that it could change?
It's been since 95, it's been 6-1 Republican. There's a Democratic mayor and a Democratic clerk treasurer. Okay. So, but the council's been pretty Republican. When I came here in 87, it was the other way around. Democrats had the majority on council.
Yeah, well, things haven't changed here in Bloomington. It's been a Democratic council since well before I got here, and I've been here forever, as you know.
Yeah, well, our mayor is going, for fourth terms, and he has accumulated the largest number of votes of anybody in city history, Fred Armstrong, and he's just a very extremely popular candidate, and he has defeated three solid, pretty well-known people in the community, a former county office holder, former sheriff, and a former member of the previous administration, high profile. So this year there was just really the party didn't put anybody up against him.
We'll get back to some issues with you, John, in a minute, but I want to
get
Mark on and find out what's going on in Terre Haute.
Well, we actually have a fairly lively mayoral race going on, and the element that kind of has made it more competitive, because typically in Terre Haute Republicans don't fare very well at all. We've only had one Republican mayor in recent memory, and that was a four-year span in the early 70s, late 60s. But the caveat here is that kind of a splinter faction of the Democratic Party has jumped aboard the Republican campaign. And those numbers, at least given from how it turned out in the primary, combined with the Republican candidate Duke Bennett, his numbers from the primary would seem to at least make it a closer race than typically a Republican-Democrat race would be. Mayor Burke did win fairly substantially in the primary, and would seem to be a clear favorite in the fall. But we had in 2006 we had a Republican win the prosecutor's race here, which was a rarity. And so that element is out there for maybe a disaffected group to swing things a little bit.
Mm-hmm. What are the key issues?
Well, a lot of it centers around downtown development and the use of tax incentives and that sort of thing to bring in businesses down here. We've had in the last month the opening of the new Terre Haute House, which is a Hilton Garden Inn, where the old one had stood for decades in decay and disrepair. A lot of people look at that as a trigger to downtown renaissance, and but there are people that are just for a variety of reasons opposed to Mayor Burke, who have that as an issue as being an unwise expenditure of tax incentives through TIF money and that sort of thing to bring these hotels into downtown. There is a Hilton Garden Inn there, and there is the plan for and partial structural work toward a second extended stay hotel across the street. So in theory, by the end of 2008, we could have two new downtown hotels, which is the first real significant development downtown in at least 20 years, and in terms of hotels, much longer than that.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to move to Adam here in a minute, but we have a phone call already, so let's go to Jim. Jim.
Hey, how you doing? I wanted to ask this of your speakers on the show today. The current administration is refusing to answer allegations that they're giving a lot of this TIF and monies and other abatements and so forth to the Gibson family and all their associated companies without, you know, doing any bids on projects and so forth. And now the mayor is refusing to even debate Duke Bennett, the other candidate. And I want to see what their opinion is on all of that.
All right. Okay. Which one of you wants that?
I could not hear that question. I apologize.
Oh, I think that, Mark, I think that was for you. Duke Bennett is... He's running in Terre Haute, correct?
Yes, he is a Republican candidate.
Yeah. It was a question about that and about the Gibson family.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you familiar with that issue?
I'm in what respect? I know the Gibsons.
That there's some bidding going or lack of bidding going on in some. The caller said that the current administration, I believe, is allowing some contracts to go to the Gibson County without appropriate bidding. If I heard that question correctly,
so you wouldn't debate, wouldn't debate it with other candidates down the campaign too.
Yeah. Are you familiar with that issue?
Yeah, I'm not sure what angle we're going at, but I think
good luck with that one.
Yeah, the central complaint that comes up a lot is that the fact that Greg Gibson, who is a local businessman here and you know, probably the most the person with the most financial wherewithal to make downtown projects happen, is indeed involved in many of them. He was at the purchase point when the Terre Haute House, the old one, came down. He was the person who came forward with the money to demolish it, and then it was sold again to the Doras to operate the hotel. And I think in a lot of, in skepticism, a lot of people think that the contracts for those for that sort of thing happened without any sort of consideration for other possibilities, and it went directly to something that was somehow prearranged. Mm-hmm. The mayor has said that's not the case, and I think in a lot of ways those sorts of things would probably inherently come up because you know when someone that has that kind of wherewithal gets into the process, then anyone else would see it as a sealed deal.
Yeah, well, your caller Jim clearly thinks that that's an issue that needs a little bit more discussion over there in Terre Haute. So
I've got a question for Mark Bennett before we leave Terre Haute.
Okay.
For the time being, Mark, obviously Terre Haute has a recent history of kind of running its incumbent mayors out on a rail after one term, at least in the primary process. What's different about Kevin Burke?
Well, I think it's impossible not to be anywhere in the city and not see myriad projects, whether they're infrastructure or downtown buildings or sidewalk improvements, the bike paths going on. There is a lot of that were things that were already in the pipeline to begin from previous administrations, and I think fairly regularly the mayor points that out as well. But these things are happening. There were no, stalls and roadblocks. What the point that comes up, I think, in opposition is that, are we doing too much too fast with tax money that we've overextended ourselves to try to get all these things going at once, which is something that people should be watching. But the results that you see out there were certainly at least in people's minds when the primary occurred and the mayor had about 57% of the vote, which broke a long trend back to 1991 of our mayoral incumbents losing in the primary. So I think what fueled his success there was what you can visually see as you're around Terre Haute.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to turn to Adam. Adam, it's good to have you here. It's the first time we've shared this this program. And Mary Catherine's just off today. She'll be back next week. But Adam, you've been following the Bloomington elections too. What are some of your observations about what's happening in the Mark Kurzan, David Sabaw race, and then also the other city council race?
Sure. Well, we've got four contested city council races. Well, three contested and then an at-large race where we've got four candidates for three seats. Look into the mayor's race. It's interesting. Bloomington hasn't had a Republican mayor in 35 years. Is that right?
1971. Frank McCloskey was elected, so it was before 1971.
All right. Mm-hmm. So I guess the conventional wisdom is that outgoing District 5 City Councilman David Sabaw is not the favored candidate in the race. However, I'll defer to you, Bob, for historical context. But it seems as though that race has gotten a little bit more attention than perhaps people had maybe would have thought a year or two ago.
Yeah, I think we had a story which in our paper about. Mm. 18 Democrats that have sent out a flyer, Democrats for Sabaw, and we've received a lot of criticism about it. That would probably not surprise you, John, because people are saying, well, it's only 18 out of how many thousands of Democrats are there in Bloomington. But as I've said to our critics, I've been here a long time, and there's never been an organized group of Democrats who actively supported the Republican candidate in a mayoral race. And the 18 are just the people who put their name on this flyer. I do think that there are others. And as Mark Kurzan has pointed out, I'm sure there are some Republicans that support him too. But this very open act of sort of division within the Democratic Party in the general election, often these things come in the primaries. We've seen that before. That seems to indicate that there may be a little bit more interest or maybe some dissatisfaction with Mayor Kurzan than his party members, than Democrats have usually had going into a fall election.
And I wonder, Bob, if some of the Democrats who are dissatisfied with the Kurzan administration really do want to see David Sabaw win, or if it's more that they kind of want Mayor Kurzan to win re-election, but not without a scare.
That's it's an interesting question, and I honestly don't have the answer to that. I think one of the ways I've been looking at this race is, what would the city look like with a Democratic mayor and eight or nine, or a Republican mayor and eight or nine Democrats on the city council? Of course, John, I could probably defer to you about how that works in Terre Haute, but in Columbus, I'm sorry, but I'm not sure how well that would work in Bloomington. So, I don't know. I mean, the council races here, as you know, I mean, there will be a Democratic majority on the council no matter what happens.
Sure.
If all the Republicans were to win, it'd still be 5-4. I think it's unlikely that all the Republicans are going to win anyway. So
that brings us to one of the city council races that I'm particularly interested in, which is the District 2 race, where we have Brad Whistler, who's been on the council for about a year, was elected by caucus after Jason Bannock stepped down from the seat, going up against Jillian Kinsey, a first timer, and I wonder if. I've talked to a lot of folks who feel very good about Brad Whistler and have expressed a lot of opinion in favor of him, even though if they're Democrats. And I wonder if looking at the city council meetings, people feel as though that Brad Whistler, regardless of whether or not they agree with him ideologically on any specific point, are attracted to the fact that he seems to ask a lot of really common sense questions at the council and can be kind of a mitigating force on the occasional eccentricities of the city council. I wonder what you think about that, Bob.
Well, I came running into the studio about a minute before we went on the air today, as you know, and it's because I was interviewing Brad Whistler and Jillian Kinsey in our endorsement interview process. Mm-hmm. And the interview went pretty long, mainly because they're both such articulate candidates.
Sure, yeah.
And it was a pleasure to sit down and talk with those two folks. They both have a lot of really good ideas for the city of Bloomington. One of the questions that people might want to ask is – well, there are a couple things. One is we've had a very male city council for a long time.
That is
so
true.
The fact that Jillian Kinsey is a strong candidate and a female could be attractive to many voters. On the other hand, we also have a very Democratic city council. Brad Whistler is a very articulate Republican council member. And candidate, and that might have a little something to do with some people voting, thinking maybe it shouldn't be a 9-0 city mm-hmm. council if they're thinking on voting for the other Democrats. But both of them have a lot of good ideas. They would both be excellent city council members, so
Absolutely.
It'll be interesting to see how that race works out. I want to go back to John for a minute because I mentioned that the city runs with a person of one party in the mayor's office and a council that's mainly people from the other party. How's that working?
Collaboration is a key that is kind of vibrates throughout the community among not only the council but between, believe it or not, city and county, between the county and our delegation at the state legislature, and on several issues, we work closely with congressmen, and we have Pence and Hill representing both sides of the aisle. So, I think the idea is that there's a concept of where we want to head as far as economic development and infrastructure, and there's only one way to get to that point, and that's by working together. It could be with a 6-1 margin on city council, and that's been pretty set for a decade anyway. And then with Fred being the longest serving mayor and also the most popular, the council does have the majority, but they know that the voters have put Fred in three times and heading on a fourth, and he's very, very popular. And I don't know, we don't sit here and with a chalkboard and mark black marks or anything, but there have been an incredible array of major issues that we're dealing with right now, not the least of which is whether our tax bills are going to go up 8%, as the assessor says, or 24%, as the auditor says. So there's a lot of people chewing their fingernails. And our tax bills are in the mail, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, not really in the mail. They'll be in the mail next week.
Yeah. We had your superintendent here a couple weeks ago.
And, right.
Yeah, he told us that the checks weren't in the mail yet.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. And there are some veteran members of council, and including some running in this race, are a little bit nervous about that, because I remember a city councilman telling me one time that after a meeting he got chewed out by a person because there was a big expansion at a local elementary school, and they chewed the city councilman out, and he tried to explain diplomatically that he doesn't really vote on the school stuff. But, you know, so if they're nervous that here's the election coming down right after they get their tax bills, and they're going to be mad, and goodness knows what could happen. Anything could happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I want to talk a little bit more about municipal elections before we're going to take a break in probably about 5 minutes. And then after we come back, hopefully we can talk some about how 2008 is shaping up also, because we you know, I that's going to be interesting on a number of levels. But I want to go back to Adam briefly. So, what are the issues that you think are this Bloomington City race is going to turn on?
Well, what's interesting to me is what are not the issues, first of all, and one of those is property taxes has not been the issue here that it is in a lot of municipal races around the state. Although David Sabak has tried to make it so at a couple of times, I'm not quite sure exactly why that is, other than that maybe that there isn't much of a dissatisfaction, at least with the assessment process in Monroe County, as there is in other counties. One reason being that I think if you walk into County Assessor Judy Sharp's office with the idea that your assessment is wrong, you will likely leave with your tail between your legs. So obviously budgeting, of course, comes up. You know, it's interesting because municipal elections, they're incredibly important, but often they come down to very fundamental things. You know, the bushes are growing over a section of road that I drive, or things that seem very, very mundane but really do profoundly affect people's everyday lives. And those are the things that keep coming back again and again here.
Yeah. And as you know, I mean, we're in Bloomington. A lot of things come before our city council, and there are a lot of there's a lot of discussion in this particular election. You know, the Cruzan administration is talking about let's keep Bloomington. I mean, that's
sure.
His whole issue, or his main focus is, you know, quality of life is the economic engine that drives our community. And David Sabah's main focus has been, you know, on we need better economic development, stronger economic development, stronger quality, we need the jobs first, and that will lead to quality of life. So it's kind of two ways to look at the same thing.
Absolutely.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
If on economic development, are they shooting for manufacturing or high tech, or are they saying both?
Well, they're shooting for high tech, but they're also the mayor here, Mark Cruzan's campaign, is that he's expanded the definition of economic development to include, you know, the arts and culture and other quality of life kinds of things, which I think is appropriate in Bloomington. The arts and tourism drive a lot of things here. So he's expanded that. He has added two people to the mayor's office, people who are in economic development positions, for one for the arts and one for sustainability and sustainable business. So, which would encourage small business, I guess. It's small business and sustainable business. So.
And speaking of sustainability, I think another big issue has been downtown development. Mm-hmm. Obviously, downtown Bloomington has gone through some very visible changes in recent years with the addition of some very urban-looking, very large housing complexes that largely cater to students. And there are some more in the pipeline. And the question is, do we want our downtown to get more urban and more dense and more concentrated, or do we want to maintain that small town downtown feel at the expense perhaps of allowing sprawl to continue in the community unmitigated?
Yeah. So, yeah, those are the issues we're facing here. So, you know, is anybody saying let's keep Columbus, or let's keep Terre Haute?
Well, I think there's always that possibility, that sentiment,
sure. Uh-huh.
Because it's some of this stuff, all of this stuff costs money and costs big money. And again, when you don't know what the tax bill is going to be, and there's a lot of people on fixed income, they're very nervous about it. But we made a major commitment of going ahead with a parking garage, which has been on the agenda for about 30 years, and now it's under construction. I don't know if there's time before the break, but
sure.
I'd be interested if you people can tell me what we can expect with our parking deck downtown. It's the first one we have, first garage type. Structure.
Well, I want to bring Mark Bennett back in to see if he has an answer for this before I give you a few comments.
I had to chuckle when you said, is there anybody wanting Terre Haute to stay Terre Haute? I think you could ask it in the reverse. There are people here that want Terre Haute to stop being Terre Haute on both sides. And I say that in jest, but
what I mean is
that a lot of people really want to see the city move away from a label of a stagnant, sleepy town, and that's on both sides. There's different ideas about how to get there and how quickly to get there. But I don't think there's a lot of people, you know, hoping that things stay as they are.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. How about the parking garages in Terre Haute?
Those are interesting qualities here. One is. Is about two decades, I believe, old. And a second one is under construction right now. It's a multimodal facility that will also involve about, I believe, about 50% of the spaces for Indiana State University parking, as well as being used for bus interchange and commercial bus and in theory taxis and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And that is underway and should be wrapped up next year. And that is just to the north of this new hotel and near Holman Center. If you talk to anybody that deals with parking at Indiana State, they would tell you that those are sorely needed, and that's another chicken and egg thing. The idea is if there's enough parking down there, then people will come downtown and use some of the downtown amenities more often because they're not searching for places to park. We could accommodate a small convention, a gathering, things, people coming from out of town to go to basketball games down here or the larger events like the NCAA cross country championships and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I would say, John, I'm not sure exactly how to answer your question, but I would say parking is a huge issue mm-hmm. in Bloomington. There are three parking garages downtown now that the city has had some involvement in. One of them is just a parking garage. It was the first one. It's freestanding. It attaches to the Fountain Square Mall downtown. The second one built has retail on the ground floor, and it was specific to have retail outlets where Scotty's restaurant is and some other things. And the third one is behind the Hilton Garden Hotel and was built as part of that project and some apartments. A fourth one was discussed at great length when a company wanted to stay downtown, Fine Light. But the city has opted to go for a parking study, and then they've hired a parking consultant who's trying to determine what the true parking needs are in the downtown area. There's a lot of disagreement about it. I recently heard in one of my endorsement interviews, one of the council members was talking about the fact that the early results of the parking from the parking consultant is that the spaces are underutilized and that probably we have about another parking garage of spaces that aren't being used now. So, I don't know if that's
A story on it a couple months ago about it, whether they were just basically break even or a little short of that?
And it's it's whether we're subsidizing parking. Mm-hmm. In downtown Bloomington right now.
So are people going to park in our parking deck?
I believe they will. I believe they will. I believe
it's a lovely hike all the way through Brown County.
Right. I don't know.
Yeah, come on over.
Don't know enough about where it is exactly, but I think that people do park in the parking garages here, but sometimes it's kind of the last resort. You know, they'll drive around town looking for a space right next to the restaurant they want to go to. if they don't find it,
right,
then, well, I'll head to the parking garage.
I'm just a little skeptical because they had one in Richmond when I worked over there, and it wasn't used all that much. But I think this has got great potential. And it's a good sign of a commitment, is it, to answer the previous question on growth and heading into, an expansion possible period downtown, mm-hmm, development.
Well, maybe it's just that I hang out with so many people who ride bicycles, but I increasingly hear from people amid all the talk about lack of downtown parking is that the downtown is clearly thriving. Mm-hmm. That's indisputable, I think, in Bloomington. And so if you take out the issue of subsidizing the parking, which I think is a valid issue and has some separate implications, but just look at the quantity, you could certainly make a legitimate argument to say that, well, if you want to utilize all these fantastic new things we've got downtown, maybe you should just not drive. Maybe you should move downtown. Maybe the market can just kind of
– right.
These aren't folks who are usually really big on market driving the development, but this is a case where maybe it might make sense in some people's minds.
All right. We've hit our break time. Again, I want to tell our listeners that we have John Harmon from the Columbus Republic and Mark Bennett from the Terre Tribune Star. Adam Ragusea from WFIU is here. I'm Bob Zaltzberg. We're talking about the city elections. We're going to move into looking at 2008 after we take a short break. You're listening to Noon Edition. Welcome back to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Zaltzberg from the Herald Times, along with Adam Ragusea from WFIU, and joining us by phone, John Harmon from the Republic in Columbus and Mark Bennett from the Tribune Star in Terre Haute. If you have questions or comments today, please email us, noon@indiana.edu. We've discovered that our phones are not working the way we'd like them to, probably because we have John and Mark both taking up these phone lines.
No question.
That's right. But you can still email us all the questions that you want, and we're going to be talking about politics here for the next 20, 25 minutes. Well, I want to – unless you have any other city issues you want to talk about, I want to sort of turn ahead to what we can expect in 2008 because I think that's going to be a heck of a year.
Sure.
I just want to put to mention, it's kind of ironic, Mark was talking earlier, the two hotels going downtown. We also have two hotels going downtown that the Doors are putting in, and it's really going to have a major impact, and it's an exciting among the exciting developments that we have going.
Are there any people poo-pooing those or questioning why they're being done?
Oh yeah, anything that's any step in any direction, not to be sarcastic or cynical.
No, I would never think that you would be that
no
way, John.
No way. But yeah, there's questions. We haven't had one down, but we haven't had hotels downtown. But y'all have been down the interstate in both Taylorsville. The first exit heading south from Indy is just exploded in growth in the last 10 years. It's where the manufacturers, the outlet malls down there, and then also the 46 exchange here going into Bloomington. There's several hotels, motels there. So this is a major investment by a state company that's obviously doing it throughout the state. I think there's been a major commitment to support that, and it's a major piece of our overall downtown development, including the demise of the Commons, which you're probably familiar
oh,
with.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's reached about the end of its useful life, and so there's a major change coming up on that. So those are things we're looking forward to.
We think there are going to be some more hotels in downtown Bloomington, too. There's a Courtyard and a Hilton Garden Inn. There are a couple of bed and breakfasts, and there's been some sort of some hinting around by the mayor. Actually, he's said there may be some announcements soon. So we'll see what else happens here. Adam, do we have an email?
We have an email, yeah, before we get away from city elections. This is regarding Bloomington City Council elections. It says, I've talked to Councilman Brad Whistler after this week's City Council meeting and thanked him for the work he's been doing. I've watched him over the past year. I usually vote for Democrats. Even though Brad is a Republican, I perceive that he is not dogmatically partisan. He is open-minded, questions assumptions, listens to opposing viewpoints, and asks intelligent questions. Unfortunately, I don't live in his district, so I can't vote for him, but I know that there are other Democrats who support him because of his progressive thinking. I hope and believe that voters are more concerned with issues than partisanship, so I just want to put in a good word for Mr. Whistler, and I hope that he will be able to continue his career as city councilman. Steve Forrest.
All right. Well, if we have any Jillian Kinsey supporters out there,
sure, yeah, we'd love to get an email.
Probably send us an email.
Yeah.
All right. We don't want to be too partisan on this show. All right. Let's talk a little bit about 2008, and there are several different levels. I think the governor's race. Let's start with the governor's race. Do you think Mitch Daniels has? He certainly has done a lot of things. Do you think they've been a positive influence, or do you think he's made enough enemies that he'll have some trouble? John?
Well, I think he's definitely rolled the dice, and I don't know. It's difficult to measure how much the collective memory is of the electorate, such as, you know, the leasing, the toll road leasing that set off, or the ongoing interstate, you know, privatization of interstates. But he's definitely one that was made major news over here was, if you recall, the Bureau of Motor Vehicles when they were closing the license branches.
I
mean,
he
wanted to make it more efficient, and it meant that some people were going to lose their post offices, and that didn't go over well here at all. So I know he made some men. Now, again, on the other hand, that's been a couple of years, so whether that's going to still stick, I don't know. But he has been aggressive, and I don't think he was out to make a lot of all kinds of friends, and we certainly will find out.
Yeah, Mark, how about in Terre Haute? What are you thinking?
Well, I think that he has definitely gotten to the point where it's almost like a Hillary Clinton thing, where if you like him, you do, and if you don't, you really don't. And so I'm not sure that anybody could fault him for inactivity at all, because he's been and you use the word aggressive. I'd say that's an accurate term. And in doing anything like that, you'll immediately get detractors right away. And every step he's taken has not been just a mild step. Some of them have been hugely out of the box. The road projects are obviously part of that, and the privatization is something that a lot of people on both sides don't swallow well. So I'm not sure that a solid Democratic candidate couldn't work with a whole lot of those and use them to their advantage and beat him.
I kind of thought we were in for a wild and woolly ride when he announced at his first State of the State address his plan for a 1% tax on people making, you know, over $100,000 in the state. I knew that wasn't going to be very popular with a lot of people, but
and there are other things that don't amount to a whole lot, but they're enough to tick off a large amount of people. The time change thing was, in reality, once it's happened, at least in this part of the state, it's basically a non-issue now. People kind of hang around and mow their lawns in the evenings now and that sort of thing. Yeah. But for all the tumult that came out of it, you wonder, is that a real reason to not like him?
That was similar to the parking deck in Columbus. We set the league. You probably read this in Guinness record book. We set the league on parking studies here and on and on. But it was a circular discussion. Well, that's the same way with the daylight savings. How many years are we going to and they kind of crystallized that argument or discussion, and it kind of honed in on economic development and basically made us look like we better do this or we're going to be, and so they did it. And yep. thank goodness for that. I mean, we could, or else we could. And if I suppose if it doesn't work out, but I haven't seen a whole lot of people complaining, especially golfers, and like, you know, that may, it can be changed. But at least he did it. Got off center. Got things moving.
Yeah. I'm not sure that the influx of economic prosperity has come with it. I think that was, I don't know if that was a actual advantage that was being sold to people or if it was just, you know, this might happen. But, you know, I personally like the idea of being able to do things in the evening.
Well, I need to remind our listeners that our phone lines are not working today, but you can email us at noon@indiana.edu. I'm Bob Zaltzberg from the Herald Times, along with Adam Ragusea from WFIU. And those two voices you just heard were John Harmon from the Columbus Republic and Mark Bennett from the Terre Haute Tribune Star. We're talking about politics, and we moved on to 2008 now. We were talking about Mitch Daniels. We probably should mention the Democratic side of that gubernatorial race. It appears that Jill Long Thompson has probably got a pretty good shot at getting that nomination. Adam, what do you—
Well, the only question there is the issue of a fundraising ability. The standard line on the Democratic side of the governor's race up to this point has been that Jill Long Thompson has name recognition from her past as a congressperson from the state of Indiana. She also was undersecretary of agriculture for 4 years in the Clinton administration, I believe. Then there's this this architect in Indianapolis, Jim Schellinger, mm-hmm. a man with his own considerable personal resources. And so the standard line has been it's money versus name recognition. But it seems that in whatever polling data has been done so far, Jill Long Thompson is coming in significantly ahead.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about Congress because we had now we've got a couple of different races we have to refer to. But it looks like we're going to head into Hill versus Sodrel number 4.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, John, what are you you handicapping that one?
We ran an editorial saying, "Come on, fellas, you know, let's keep it clean." That was the most embarrassing campaign that I can recall. I mean, in anything. And it reminded me of one of the early Pence campaigns when he was trying to unseat Sharp. I don't want to get into too much history here, but anyway, it was people from not from Indiana were calling the shots. We're voting on this race, but they're calling these shots and putting these ludicrous ads out, blistering the other candidate with emails and. Ads that are, you know, half full of truth and half full of distortions. It was just embarrassing, and I just hope that Hill and Sodrel can rise above that and say let's fight this on our own turf, debate it civilly. And the one that I just got to give Eric Schonsberg, uh-huh. a lot of credit because I would just wait in those debates, and I went to several of them, just for a breath of fresh air. You know, and he was common sense, a bit of a professorial, which would only expect. You know, and I don't know. I can't say that I'm looking forward to it.
And Schonsberg is in the race again this year.
Although it's a lot more exciting. And also, you know, about the emailer, partisanship. There's something to be said for partisanship.
Oh, yes.
It's not necessarily, and this is not good. I don't see this election here, a 9% turnout in our primary.
9%, yeah, that's pretty good.
I mean, that's we need, and again, not to dwell on history, but our last city election, the Democrats had a full slate of candidates, and as did the Republicans, and it was a very qualified slate and the all up and down the line, and we would not have been hurt regardless of who won. Well, they didn't do well. They only won the one seat, and you know, and now I think our Democratic Party and is hurting. And we don't have the partisanship, and it would be nice to see that, if only for something else that was mentioned earlier, to spark some debate, to throw in some questions, so that there aren't always 7-0 or 6-1 votes. It just seems healthier, and from history, I think it is better off for the community.
Yeah.
Bob, I wonder if I could build on that for a second.
Sure, go ahead.
Just to say that, you know, I'm doing this show here with some gentlemen who have been doing this a lot longer than me. I'm just into my second year here doing this stuff. But what I can tell you is that I've learned probably the most striking thing I have learned in the time that I've been working as a journalist in this community is how profoundly important state and local offices are to the way that people live their lives. And I wonder if maybe the cable news, 24-hour news cycle has gotten people's heads increasingly into the federal mindset, the global mindset when they're thinking about politics. And if you've only got your mind on the national and you've only got your eye on the national or international ball, there's some other balls that are going to whiz right by your head. And so many of the decisions that really profoundly affect the way you live your daily life happen in state houses, and they happen in mayor's offices and city council and county council chambers. And, you know, for better or worse, usually worse, national elections, presidential elections tend to drive the elections that trickle down from beneath them. And I would just I would say that voters out there now have more tools available to them than ever before if they're feeling uninformed to get informed before they go vote. You're listening to people from three newspapers, all of which have archives that you can go and look at online if you want to learn about candidates to make an intelligent decision.
Now, I'll add to that too. And John and Mark, do you guys endorse candidates?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
We have. It really depends on the overall – on the election and – but we don't – and we didn't for several years. We just started about – 4 years. We restarted about 4 years ago.
Well, the reason I bring that up is that this year, for the first time, you know, we are videotaping our endorsement interviews, mm-hmm. and we're posting those interviews.
That's great.
Online. And, you know, if you go to a community forum where there are local candidates, the candidates will get, you know, maybe a minute and a half to answer a question, and then the other one gets a minute and a half, and there are going to be several different council races. Well, you know, the interviews that I just came from, it was an hour with two candidates, and we didn't put time limits on questions. We just expected people to be civil and to be fair, and they were. And there's one issue in that particular race. It's about the incumbent Brad Whistler's vote on the Jack Hopkins Fund, which is our social service fund. And Jillian Kinsey, the challenger, was able to really quiz him about that, and Brad was able to answer the questions and give real longer answers to why he did what he did, and Jillian was able to question that, and there was a good back and forth and a good dialogue. So when you talk about – when Adam, you talk about more tools, I don't think we've even begun to see how local news outlets can cover these elections.
Sure.
You know, we're working on that still.
Well, what bothers me is we have just – and as I alluded to earlier, we have the – Park Index. We have the, you know, the tax issue. We have a major, like a $85 million sewer project. We have just a issue upon issue. We have, and the backdrop is the handling of the whole immigration issue on locally, statewide, federally, and to have the lack of interest, it just is really a concern.
Yeah, but I think on the other side of that coin, I would say to Adam, you know, as you said, we've been at this a long time because we're old and you're young. But it is true that we have more – I believe there are more national issues that are really important to people than there ever have been. I mean, mm-hmm. you look at what's going on with the war in Iraq and the personal freedoms that seem to be at risk and just a lot of the terrorism. I mean, there are – and just the fact that the world has gotten smaller and people just know more about the world because of technology, that it's made these issues more important on the local level. John, Mark, would you agree with that?
I would. I have to say, I guess we can pat our community on the back. We had a 25% turnout in the primary, which
that's fantastic.
Sounds, all right, yeah.
Sounds small, but
let's keep Terre Haute.
I think you're right, and there are local issues here that energize people, and I think in particular they. You know, they really – you know, I joked earlier about Terre Haute's not wanting to be Terre Haute. And what I really meant by that is that, you know, just about everybody here wants to see better days ahead. And I think, you know, the things that are happening here and people – and things that people hope happen here are what energize them to get out and vote, at least at the 25% level in the spring. And I would certainly guess that at least that amount would – show up this fall if it doesn't rain.
I want to ask – yeah, right. Mark, I want to ask you about congressional races in Terre Haute. Brad Ellsworth, is he
Yeah, that should be it should be interesting how this one turns out. He'll be running against most likely the candidate will be a gentleman named Greg Good, who worked in the offices with some previous Republican congressmen from who were from Terre Haute, and I would think you know, having a candidate from here would help get some of the get over the hill in terms of Democratic leaning Vigo County. He may be able to, you know, if he were able to win Vigo County out of the 18 in the 8th district, that may be enough to really challenge Ellsworth, because it's such a heavily Republican district in other places, and the Democrats dominate here in Vigo County. But on the other hand, Ellsworth won by a significant margin, 69% of the vote over Hostetler last time, and hasn't really done anything to harm himself so far. He's already, you know, been tabbed the most glamorous person in Washington and by the Hill,
the Hill magazine. So, yeah. The sexiest in the Hill, I think.
Yeah, there you go. And so he's got that going for him. But you know, and other things that that he carried through that prime or through that past election would seem to still be there. A lot of the, you know, they call them Blue Dog Democrats, and he's, you know, you strip the party tag away, and he sounds very much like a Republican, which plays well in this district. So,
yeah.
To beat him, there's going to have to be something to hang the hat on, because he's not done anything to really harm himself yet.
All right, I've saved the biggest race for last. We've got about a minute and a half to go, so I'm going to ask everybody who's going to be at the top of the ticket in 2008. Then, you know, no ducking this question. Just, you know, as right now in October of 2007, who do you think will be the nominees? And John Harmon, you're going to get to go first.
Oh, because a good friend of mine's son is working on his campaign, I'd say Obama.
Obama, okay.
And I don't know, McCain.
McCain, Obama.
Yeah.
Okay. Mark?
I got to put a plug in for Mike Pence. He's our other congressman. I mean,
oh, yeah.
It's not
oh,
just,
yeah.
You know, and he's been very aggressive and done a lot of, made a big impact.
Okay. All right. Didn't mean to leave him out. All right, Mark.
I personally see a good chance that Obama will lead the Democratic ticket, although a Clinton buy ticket may appeal to people, and that seems to be a coalition that's already formed. On the other side, I would have to say Giuliani.
Okay. Adam?
Stephen Colbert at the top of both tickets.
Okay. That's the young vote. And I'll just say Mitt Romney, and I agree with that Clinton buy ticket. I think Evan Bayh is going to be on the
absolutely.
On the ticket.
I think so.
All right. But we are out of time.
As long as you can spell potato.
That's right. We are out of time. John Harmon from Columbus and Mark Bennett from Terre Haute, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
And for Adam Ragusa, thanks for being here, Adam.
Thank you.
Producer Catherine Hageman and engineer Mike Pashkash. I'm Bob Zaltzberg. Thanks for listening.
Noon Edition is a production of WFIU and the Herald Times. A podcast of this and other WFIU programs is available at WFIU.org.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the 286-horsepower TL Type S with Bluetooth phone connectivity. Learn more at Acura.com.